Radio News, it's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The lazy, hazy days of summer are upon us, a favorite season for many a Granite Stater. But it's also a fact that crime tends to go up over the warm months. And so this summer, NHPR's newsroom is looking at this issue, specifically in Manchester. In a series called Queen City Crime, our reporters will examine a number of challenges facing police and residents in the state's largest city, including a disturbing rise in drug-related crime, with a renewed spike in heroin use in New Hampshire. The series will also look at how police interact with different communities in Manchester. Other topics will include the role of community policing and neighborhood watch groups, an issue on many people's minds this week, with a Florida jury in the Trayvon Martin shooting finding neighborhood watch volunteer George Zimmerman not guilty in Martin's death. Today in The Exchange, Queen City Crime. We're sitting down with Manchester Police Chief David Mera, and we'll hear from other voices as well. Let's hear from you, too. If you live in Manchester, what do you see as the biggest crime problems, and what do you make of the police response? Even if you don't live in the Queen City, how do you see your own community's police approaching crime in your town? Do you think there are better approaches? Let's hear from you. Your thoughts and ideas are welcome at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And as I said, Police Chief David Mera of Manchester is with us. He's been on the force in the Queen City for 27 years. And Chief Mera, thanks a lot for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
Well, why does crime increase in the summer? And are we talking about a big increase or a small increase?
Yeah, it's a noticeable increase, and the weather has a lot to do with that. For instance, burglaries. People tend to leave their windows open. There are more people out. People are out later at night. So there's a tendency to have more opportunity to have a crime be committed.
People are away from their homes. They're on vacation.
Exactly.
In the meantime, not to disparage teenagers, but, you know, they've got some time on their hands. They're hanging out late at night.
That's right. And most crimes are crimes of opportunity when you're talking about thefts and burglaries. So a lot of those crimes can be prevented.
How do you see the overall picture of criminal activity changing in Manchester, Chief Mera? As I said, you've been on the force 27 years. That's a long time. I'm guessing you've seen a lot of changes.
I have. I started in 1986, and Manchester was a different place in 1986. It was more of a small town feel, even though it was a city. It was more of a small town feel. It was less transient. And what has happened is a lot of the neighborhoods that were stable neighborhoods, for instance, the West Side, was for the most part French Canadians. And it was generation after generation. That has changed. Now, back in the 80s, when I first started, if we needed an interpreter, it would more than likely be somebody that speaks French. Now in the Manchester schools, I believe the number is up to 80-something languages. I could be wrong, but it's way up there. And sometimes it's tough to find the right interpreter to be able to communicate with somebody. So Manchester has changed. Back in the 90s, there was a big uptick in crime that was related to drugs. At that time, crack hit New Hampshire. It hit later than it did in Massachusetts and other New England states. Initially, people were cooking their own crack. They were producing their own crack with powder cocaine and baking soda in there. They're cooking it up. But what happened is drug dealers saw, hey, that's a wide-open territory. It hit Manchester in particular very hard. Next thing you know, you had people coming from other states. They found that they could sell a rock of crack cocaine for $20, where back where they're from, it would cost $5.
Wow.
So we got a big influx, and we had to grapple with that, and we were successful. We got federal funds, Operation Street Sweeper, it was called. And we were successful in combating that problem. It took us a few years, but we got a handle on it. Recently, though, the biggest problem drug-related that we have is this addiction to prescription drugs. There's been a proliferation of that. It's an epidemic. I talked to Colonel Quinn for the state police. I talked to other chiefs of police. They say the same thing. What happens with prescription drugs, somebody is, if you're at a party, most people, young people, they're at a party and somebody says, hey, why don't you try some heroin? Here's a needle. Most people aren't apt to inject themselves with it. That would be a foreign concept to them. No, I'm not going to do that. But what happens is somebody say, hey, try this pill. And and it's very easy to get addicted to prescription drugs, painkillers. So before you know it, they get addicted to it. They want to have more and more. And the rule of thumb has been about a dollar a milligram. So it's a pretty expensive habit. Yeah. So what the people find is the high you get from heroin is somewhat similar, and it's cheaper. Heroin is cheaper, and it's a lot more potent than it used to be.
Yeah, there's been a spike in heroin use in New Hampshire overall.
Yes.
So what kinds of crime relate to that spike in heroin abuse?
What people that are addicted to drugs want to do is all they care about is feeding that habit.
Yeah.
So they want to get things that they can convert into cash to buy heroin or to directly convert it into heroin. For instance, they'll go to a house, they'll burglarize the house, and then the items they get from that house, they want to exchange either for heroin or cash to buy heroin.
You know, so robbery is definitely...
Well, that's burglary. Burglary in New Hampshire is a... has to do with entering a residence or a business. Mm-hmm. Robbery is a theft where force or the threat of force is used.
But
robberies, too, are related. A good percentage of robberies are related to drug addiction as well.
You know, Chief Mayor, before we sat down today, I went through some numbers from the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, which they got from the FBI, and I looked at a lot of the crime numbers from the Department of Justice. I saw some declines in some types of crime in Manchester, like motor vehicle theft and larceny. But I also saw, and I wonder what you think, a dramatic increase in Manchester over the past 25 years in the rate of assault. What do you think is happening there?
Well, I think society in general has changed. I think people, instead of talking things over, people are... There's just a society we've become more violent. People are more apt to use violence or the threat of violence than they were 25 years ago, 30 years ago, since I've been on the job.
Really?
Yes.
Because the murder rate has been pretty steady over the past 25 years. You know, it's been as high as 6 and as low as 0. It hasn't fluctuated that much. But the violent assault rate and what the FBI calls forcible rape, okay, I'm not calling it forcible rape. That's what the FBI calls it. So violent assault, again, what the FBI calls forcible rape, you think that that's just attributed to the culture? Is there something else going on there? What
no,
do you think?
I think it's just society. I think that's when I think of you. I look at those are the Part 1 crimes you're talking about, and that is what we keep track of. What in my conference room, I have a board with everybody that works for the Manchester Police Department. We have over 200 police officers at any given time. Right now, we are about to go up to about 220 police officers. And I have them up on one board and what their assignments are. And then right next to it, I have a big board with those Part 1 crimes you're talking about. And with resources the way they are and with the way police work is now, it's to a certain extent, it's stat-driven. So what happens on the crime board dictates a lot of times where I put my resources
sure.
on that board to be most effective. We have a crime analyst who will take a look at our reports, take a look at stats. For instance, today we had our weekly meeting where our crime analyst will give us the stats on burglaries. We're alarmed right now. I've seen an uptick in burglaries just in the last couple weeks. We've averaged 30 burglaries the last 2 weeks, and we have a pretty good idea, a couple leads on why that is happening. We're going to try to do everything we can to stop it, but that is what we need to do. January 2012, we noticed our first month, the burglaries jumped an incredible amount. So we looked at the way we did things. We changed some things around. The next month it went up, and we got a handle on it. We changed things. We had our divisions working more closely, the drug unit getting involved with the detective unit and patrol and community policing. At the end of the year, if you would have told me our burglary rate would have been down, I would have said no way. But we actually were able to bring our burglary rate down for 2012 from what it was in 2011. And but now we're again, we're seeing that uptick.
Right, partly because it's the summer, people's windows are open, people are away.
And it has to do with the it is a thing of opportunity. And what worries me is, if you think about your home, that is your home, your apartment where people live, that's your refuge. You have a tough day at work, the world outside isn't going good for you. You want to go home to your refuge. That is where you can feel safe. That is where you can relax.
Absolutely.
So if you come home and you find your house has been burglarized, it shatters your life. It did something. It's not like getting your car broken into. So it wrecks the quality of life in the city. That is why we put so much time and effort into trying to catch the people doing this.
Well, and I wonder, again, the burglaries partly related to crime of opportunity, as you said, but partly also, Chief Mayor, correct me if I'm wrong, related to the increase in prescription drug abuse, heroin abuse, and so forth.
Majority.
Yeah.
Majority of our burglaries have to do with drug use. We were seeing last year that people are going, they find an abandoned house, they were going there ripping out the copper, going right down to the metal yards that we have. One particular case, a woman was taking a shower, all of a sudden the water runs out. And calls the landlord found out that the pipes had been ripped out while she was in there taking a shower.
Wow.
That's what desperate people do. And so we have a list of the abandoned buildings in Manchester, and we try to check them as much as possible.
Coming up in a minute, we're going to talk with someone who works on this drug problem from the treatment end, and we'll start taking your calls, too. You can join us. Again, the number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. As part of NHPR's series on crime in Manchester this summer, we're sitting down this hour with Manchester Police Chief David Mara. He's been on the force for 27 years. We're talking about some of the changes that he's seen in terms of the crime picture in the Queen City. And we'd love to hear from you. What changes have you seen, good or bad, in terms of crime in Manchester? The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And we'll be back in just a minute.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. If you know of a local college student, a young professional, or a local business making a difference in their community, why not nominate them for a Rising Stars Award? NHPR and Stay Work Play are accepting nominations for the awards to recognize young people and innovative companies around the state. You can view complete guidelines and submit your nomination by July 26 at nhpr.org. Mostly sunny, hot today, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Some of them may be severe with damaging winds and heavy rainfall. Highs upper 80s to mid 90s. Heat advisory in effect for Hillsborough County for this afternoon. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the NEEF Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And Liberty Utilities, helping homeowners convert oil or propane heating systems to natural gas before fall. Details on conversion programs at libertyutilities.com/east/warm welcome. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Canoy. Today in The Exchange, Queen City Crime. We're sitting down with Manchester Police Chief David Mara as part of NHPR's summer series called Queen City Crime. We're hearing from other voices as well, and let's hear from you. If you live in Manchester, what do you see as the biggest crime problems? What do you make of the police response? And even if you don't live in the Queen City, how do you see your own community's police approaching crime in your town? Do you think there are better approaches? Do you think they're doing a good job? We'd love your questions, comments, and thoughts. Again, especially as we've heard that crime does tend to go up in the summer. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Chief Mara, we talked a lot in our first segment about the problems you're seeing in terms of drug-related crime, prescription drug abuse, heroin abuse, you mentioned. For a little bit more on that now, we're joined by Cheryl Wilkie. She's Senior Vice President of the Farnham Center in Manchester and Addiction Treatment and Rehab Center. And Cheryl, thanks a lot for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Well, as we said, drug-related crime seems to be going up in Manchester and other cities. What are you seeing, Cheryl?
Well, we're seeing the same thing. I mean, we have looked at, for the past 5-7 years now, the OxyContin and heroin has actually taken more lives than I've seen in my career the past 26 years.
Wow, so you've been on the job almost as long as the chief. So OxyContin especially, what does that mean in terms of crime, Cheryl? Obviously robberies, but are there other crimes that are related to this OxyContin abuse?
Oh, yes. If we look at Greenland, what happened with Greenland and the police chief over there,
right,
that all started with OxyContin. We can't just think that this is a problem that affects the drug addicts. The crime rate is going up because when you are using this drug, it's not like cocaine or marijuana. This drug is leaving people extremely ill. Coming off this drug is so painful that they will do whatever it takes to get money. If that means hurting, stealing, or killing.
Yeah, and just to remind people of what happened in Greenland, the police chief was killed there in a drug bust. A terrible thing. So
yes, it was.
So OxyContin is one of those drugs, Cheryl, that seems to induce more crime because people are just in pain and they're desperate and agitated, violent. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the physical withdrawal from any kind of opiate is something that you just can't imagine. I guess if you thought about having a flu but having dry heaves for 3 days straight with no stopping, cramping, headache, that's kind of what they go through. And when you start feeling like that, if there's no alternative, then going back out and getting more, then that's what they're going to do. And they don't care if it's a family member. I've had people take, you know, family heirlooms. They've stolen, gone into hair salons and stolen purses from people that are sitting there.
Wow.
They'll do whatever it takes.
So let me ask you this, Cheryl. If someone's arrested and they're clearly high or they clearly, you know, have a serious addiction, what do you do? Do you put them in jail? Do you bring them to Farnham House? I mean, if you can see that the crime is, you know, clearly related to a serious addiction.
Well, you know, that's something that we've looked at in the state of New Hampshire for a long time. I think that there's a lot of alternatives to incarceration programs that are out there. There's programs that are drug diversion programs, there's mental health courts. And, of course, Farnham Center recently, May 3rd, opened a first full-fledged separate detox from the hospital for drugs and alcohol. We rehabbed the Queen City Motor Inn, which was riddled with drug and alcohol problems, and turned it into a place where people can come and get the medication they need to come off the drug appropriately, then move on after 5 or 7 days to a 30-day residential program. And we get a lot of people who are coming from court systems. We get a lot of people coming from the state prison. Just because someone sits in state prison for 5 years doesn't mean they've gotten the treatment they need to get out and not use again.
You know, Cheryl, again, your interest is in treating addiction. But as you work with people to treat that addiction, how do you deal with the criminal element of what they've done? You know, as you described, there's some pretty terrible crimes associated with the addiction.
Well, you know, that is a very important part of what they have to do while they're working on this, is start looking at some of the things they've done. These are not things they're proud of. These are not things that normally would have occurred had they not been using drugs and alcohol. And I think that's the important thing, that if we started putting some money towards some of this addiction treatment, maybe we would have a much different crime rate. But we keep separating the two, and it's not going to happen. Accepting responsibility for what you've done is the first step in turning around from using drugs or alcohol.
Yeah, Cheryl, thanks a lot. Tough stuff. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Cheryl Wilkie, Senior Vice President of the Farnham Center in Manchester, as we heard, an addiction treatment and rehab center. And Chief Mayor, we've talked a lot about drug abuse and the link to crime, but I wonder what you think, too. You know, someone clearly has committed a serious crime, and yet they also have a very serious addiction problem. So what do you do about that? I mean, do you throw them in jail? I mean, they need help.
Well, as a law enforcement officer, there's a little bit of a struggle between, we want these people off the street because they have a drug addiction and they're out there and they're victimizing people.
They're hurting other people, right.
But on the other hand, there has to be a better approach. if we want to stop them from reoffending, you got to get to the root of the problem. I think more money, more resources has to be dedicated to getting what Cheryl was talking about, that the drug treatment, because it's just going to be an endless cycle that'll keep on going on.
Let's take some calls, Chief Mayor, and we'll talk some more. Our number again, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And first up is Bob and Keene. Hi, Bob. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Laura. Love your show.
Good. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, my question, I guess, were to the chief there, kind of keyed off the last comments he was making. And what I kind of get a sense of in Keene was there was a push to help the homeless. And we had that camp, I don't know if you remember, but back at Hannaford, they had a big homeless camp back there. And they rousted everybody out of there because it was unsafe and really undoable. And it seemed like Keene wanted to, you know, provide more for homeless. And these were a lot of drug people. And that it was going to be a magnet to the city. And instead of helping them, which, you know, is limited, of course, that, you know, let's put up more homeless shelters so we could draw more into the 100 nights is, you know, in the papers these days. But I just wondered what the chief thought about that, as far as just providing shelter and creating a magnet for these people that,
okay, Bob.
You're getting thrown in jail in Manchester, so come to Keene, if you know what I'm saying.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in, and I know this this discussion's been going on in a lot of other cities as well. Go ahead, Chief Mara.
Well, he does make a good point. The homeless, when we talk about homeless, and I'll talk about Manchester, the people, for the most part, that you see hanging out in the parks and in these encampments, they're not taking advantage of what services are out there. There's either some mental illness involved or substance abuse, and a lot of times both. So the people that you're seeing out there panhandling, for the most part, I'm not saying everybody, or like I say, drinking in the park, people will lump them in as just saying they're homeless. It's not like somebody that lost their job and that their family needs some help to get them back on their feet. That's the problem that towns and cities are dealing with now. It does have to do with drug addiction as well. He does make a good point, because we saw people were afraid to use the parks, a couple of parks that we had. So we're saying, what could we do in Manchester? What could we do in Manchester to as an alternative? So we opened what we call the day center, and when we opened the day center, just as he was saying, we found people heard about it, and now we started drawing people from other places to come use the day center. And the day center was a place where you could get a shower, you could get a meal, get some services. And our thoughts on that was, hey, we were going to take the people that are hanging out in the park that are just living there and panhandling, and we're going to give them an alternative so they don't have to do that. But what we're finding is it's a choice people make. And we are getting people from out of towns. We hear stories at our shelter, New Horizons. We hear people that there was a gentleman from New York that said, hey, I'm here vacationing. A homeless person from New York, he's vacationing in Manchester at the homeless shelter.
What's the solution, though, Chief Maher? I mean, you know, the idea of a magnet. On the other hand, you don't want to do nothing and just have people, you know, sleeping on the sidewalk.
Oh, I am not advocating closing anything. Believe me, it's just a dilemma. He brings up that point. It's a catch-22. You try to provide services for the people that need it that are here at the time, but then because you have those services, everybody flocks there. You look at Manchester. Manchester is the largest city in New Hampshire. It has it's a place that people who don't have licenses, they have public transportation. You have people with mental illness. There's an excellent mental health care. The Manchester Mental Health is excellent. We have the homeless shelter. A great deal of a large percent of sexual offenders live in Manchester. When they get out of prison or that they go there, they live in Manchester. We have 500 registered sex offenders in Manchester. My whole point to bringing all this people parole and probation, we have a big percentage of people that a large amount of people that live in Manchester. Because we have the services, because we have a lot to offer, we draw a lot there, and it does tax what it does tax our services that we provide.
And as we've talked about on this show before, and I'm sure you know, most homeless people, or a lot of them, are families, women with children. It's not the guy that you see, you know, asking for money on this.
It's not the person that's asking for money and then goes to the store and buys a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Those are the people that are hanging around on the street.
What is the intersection between law enforcement and the people that are hanging around on the street, as you say? Is it like, you know, loitering laws that they're breaking? Is it mental illness? Is it public misconduct?
Well, if somebody's sitting in the park, regardless of who they are, they have a right to be in the park.
Sure.
So we're not going to go and say, hey, you are an undesirable, get out of the park. But if they're drinking in the park, if they're harassing people in the park, if they're littering, we're going to take action. If somebody's on a sidewalk and they're during lunch hour in Manchester, and they're panhandling and they're blocking the people from walking, we're going to take action. If they're stepping out in the roadway, there are laws on the books that take care of that, and we can enforce it. So we are using the laws that are on the books to deal with that problem.
I've got a lot of calls, Chief Maris. So let's return to our listeners. And Allison's waiting in Plymouth. Hi, Allison. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air with Chief Mara.
Thank you very much. Hello, Chief. I had a question about stand your ground laws in New Hampshire. How does that affect your job, and does it make your life easier? Does it make it worse? Do you find this a relevant law to New Hampshire, or do we need to work harder to repeal it?
Thanks for the call, and this is on a lot of people's minds, especially given the Trayvon Martin shooting, and then just yesterday, Attorney General Eric Holder saying he doesn't like these laws.
Well, it's no secret that I spoke out against changing the law to have a stand your ground law. I believe that the state of the law at the time was adequate. We've never prosecuted anybody for self defense in their own home, and it was never ever an issue. What worried me is the way the state of the law stands now. It's if you are lawfully present anywhere and you feel threatened, you can use deadly force. That's the way the law works. And Florida has that law. And if you talk to prosecutors or police police departments in Florida, they have had a lot of cases that people have shot people, and it wasn't justified. You can have drug dealers see another drug dealer, feel threatened, and then under the law they can just pull out a gun and shoot at each other. That is what I didn't want to see in New Hampshire.
Has that happened in New Hampshire, though? 1 year in, have we had these incidents?
No. It just, right now, the way the current law, since the change, just like before, the change wasn't necessary, nothing really has happened. But the potential is there. If you look at it, if you look at the Zinnemann case, if you look at that, somebody can go outside in the street and they can go up to somebody, accost them, then they say they feel threatened. And I'm talking in the general sense. I'm not giving any kind of opinion about the Zinnemann case, but that's what's on everybody's mind. But somebody can see somebody out in a public street. They can go up to them, approach them, and then before you know it, it can escalate and they can pull a gun out and shoot without an obligation to retreat.
Allison,
safely. And let me tell you something about the law before. If you were out in a public street, if you were out in a public place, and if somebody accosted you and you felt you're in danger and there was you couldn't retreat, you could use force, necessary force, to defend yourself. There was nothing preventing you from doing that.
Allison, thanks for the call. Again, on a lot of people's minds this morning. So thanks for calling in. The number 1-800-892-6477. And joining us now on the phone to talk about yet another aspect of crime and law enforcement is Monica Zuloff. She's president and CEO of the YWCA in Manchester, which provides services to women, children, and families in the Queen City. And Monica, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, I wanted to ask what you have seen in your time in your job about crime within families, domestic violence. This is a longstanding issue, and I wonder what you've seen over the years.
I'm pleased to report that we're making progress and that we can have these conversations and that, you know, particularly here in Manchester, law enforcement absolutely understands the dynamics of domestic violence, and that wasn't always the case. I remember when I started in this work in the late 70s, it was still viewed very much as a private family matter. And police might come to a domestic violence call and they would have him walk around and cool off. They would tell her to calm down. Do you have anywhere to go? And it is taken now much more seriously. And I have to say that we work very closely with the Manchester Police. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking they really are sort of the depository of all of society's ills at this point. And back in the early days, we used to hear we're policemen, not social workers. And they really are the front line now for domestic violence, substance abuse, and mental health.
Yeah, and that may be a question I ask Chief Mara in a couple minutes. But another, because that's a point that people often make. Police have become, to some extent, social workers. I remember, Monica, about 15 years ago, New Hampshire won national praise for what was called domestic violence protocols in terms of how not just police, but medical personnel and judges dealt with rape, dealt with domestic violence. Give us a little more on that, Monica, and do we still deserve that high national standing?
I think we do. New Hampshire, we really look around the country for what's best practice, and we have really taken a community approach in response. I'll talk a minute about wishing we had more of a community response in prevention. But when a victim comes into a hospital of either a sexual assault or a domestic violence incident, we automatically get a call. We have staff on 24 hours a day or volunteers, and we get a call, and the victim may refuse to see us, but we're there. So it's less likely they're going to refuse once somebody's, on the other side of the curtain. Schools are aware, physicians are aware, law enforcement's aware. Manchester and all of the police departments now in New Hampshire do a lethality assessment when they come to a domestic violence incident, and the police will ask a series of questions, which this came out of Baltimore, and it's a screening tool for women who are more at risk of being killed by their intimate partner, and the policeman actually calls the crisis center. Most of the time it's victim-centered, but this time law enforcement will call and speak to an advocate, and neither the police or our staff mince words and say, we're talking to you because we feel your life
right.
is in danger.
Monica, thank you so much for being with us and updating us on that. We appreciate it. And we will be back after a short break.
This is NHPR. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, growing support for a new system to address sexual assault in the military. Then a new novel about a family raising a chimpanzee. All coming up on The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Decorative Interiors of Laconia, providing fine home finishes, interior design, flooring, and home decor to transform homes and businesses to inspired interiors, decorativeinteriors.net. New Hampshire Orthopedic Center, keeping bodies in motion, on the web at nhoc.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're sitting down with Manchester Police Chief David Mara. He's been on the force for 27 years. We're hearing from other voices as well as we look at crime in the Queen City of Manchester. It's part of a series that our newsroom is doing this summer. We're tapping into some of the issues that police face, and we'd like to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Chief Mara, I'd love to pick up with something real interesting that Monica Zuloff from the YWCA said just before the break. She said, 20, 30 years ago, police used to say, look, we're not social workers, we're police. But in giving you credit, she said, today you folks really are kind of social workers. I wonder what your thoughts are about that.
Well, we're out in the front lines. Our officers, they'll go and they're the first ones to discover a problem. It used to be it used to be they really didn't have the resources, they didn't have the training to solve that problem at the scene. We still don't. So we have to work with other people, other groups. It's not just a police problem, it's a society problem, and police is the law enforcement is a piece of that. Without people like Monica, without Cheryl, it has to be a group effort to attack these problems. Everybody has to pool their resources, and that's the only way you're going to make a dent into crime, drug abuse, domestic violence. And I got to tell you, I believe the murder rates are, and I believe that it'll pan out, or it'll show, stats will show, I believe the murder rates are down because of the efforts that people like Monica have made with domestic violence.
Well, and as you talk about, you can't do it alone. You need to work with other groups like Monica's, like Cheryl Wilkie, who we talked to before at the Farnham Center, the Addiction Treatment and Rehab Center. You've also been working a lot, Chief Mira, with immigrant and refugee groups and some of the newcomers to the Queen City. With us now for more on that is Nabil Magali. He's chair of the Arab American Forum, and he's on the Community Advisory Board that meets with police about immigrant issues. And Nabil, welcome back to The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
One of the issues that I've heard that comes up, Nabil, in terms of interactions with police is that some newcomers have arrived from countries where police are to be feared, to be not trusted, some police abuse in those countries. What kind of stories do you hear, Nabil, about interactions with police from newcomers, interactions that they had in their own countries, their own home countries, that makes them say, whoa, I'm not going to the police for anything here?
Actually, they might have an excuse for that. But I must tell you, Manchester Police Department did a great job in building trust with all groups, including immigrants. It's not only an immigrant issue, but immigrants, yes, need time to adjust. There is an orientation. They learn from the police. However, the fear is fear. It doesn't be erased overnight. It will be erased. It will be less fear when people know each other and trust each other. And this is the success of the Community Advisory Board, actually, and the Manchester Police Department. The board is approximately 20 people, different backgrounds, not necessarily refugees or immigrants. Department heads, community leaders, average people can come in, discuss issues, feel comfortable to talk to the police.
Well, what are some of those issues, Nabil?
The issue is basically, as you mentioned, it's a matter of trust, and building trust takes time. But we have succeeded in building trust. And building trust is a part of the function of the police department, and they do it well. You feel comfortable reporting a crime. You feel comfortable as a victim going to the police. You feel comfortable testifying if you have to. You don't have the fear. This police building is not the Bastille like in France in the past. It is a place. It is a place where people can go. They can have tours. How many police departments in the country will have Saturday brunch for community members?
You know, Nabil,
other than Manchester.
I want to ask you a question that came out of Allison's call earlier. She asked about the Trayvon Martin shooting and how that jury verdict has been so much in the news. And Chief Mara talked about how he feels about standard ground laws. Another thing that a lot of people have been talking about from this case, though, Nabil, and I want to ask you, is the idea of racial profiling. And Attorney General Holder talked about it, you know, this morning on NPR, talking about how he had to talk to his own son, his own teenage son, about what to do if he felt racially profiled. Is that one of the issues that you guys are working on the Community Advisory Board?
I don't think it's an issue in Manchester.
Really? Not at all?
I don't think. Of course, I cannot guarantee the behavior of 200 officers, and nobody can do that. But the leadership gives a role model of tolerance, of understanding. If you have an issue, you can talk to anybody up to the chief. So it's not really an issue. People might have the fear of being profiled, and the fear, again, is legitimate. You cannot control people's feelings. But again, I go back to the point of trust. Once you trust, it's unlikely that you expect profiling. Once you know your police officer by name and his cell phone number, that's trust.
You've got the police's cell phone numbers.
Actually, it is the community police officers have their cell phones posted on the website.
Wow.
And there is a little card with a phone number of your police officer. You can call him. And you know them by name. Some of them by first name.
Nabil, thank you very much for being with us. Good to hear from you.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
That's Nabil Magali, chair of the Arab American Forum and on the Community Advisory Board that meets with police about issues, including issues surrounding newcomers, immigrants, and refugees from other countries. Chief Mara, again, you know, Nabil Magali said he doesn't see a lot of racial profiling in Manchester. How do you talk about to your officers about this issue?
Well, we do provide training. We also have officers that have been trained to be trainers for effective interaction with youth, and it deals with recognizing people from different races, cultures, and it helps them relate better. So the interaction will be more positive. What we try to do is we try to reach out to kids when they're young.
This is the community policing.
The community policing. What we do is we have a school resource officer in each middle school and each high school. But we don't have, of course, we don't have the resource to put one every elementary school, and I'm not so sure it would be necessary. However, we do want to, a lot of kids in Manchester with the socioeconomic levels and other factors, they don't have the most positive, growing up, the most positive view of the police. So what we do is once a year we go to each elementary school and we call it Cops and Kids. And we'll have the SWAT vehicle, or the horses, we'll have canine demonstration.
Right.
We actually had a contest they named our newest horse. So we do things like that. So the way we look at it, until they get to middle school, from kindergarten up, they will have a positive interaction with the police. And we're hoping we can build on that once they get to middle school with the school resource officer. But just talking about community policing, when you talk about the Zimmerman case, I feel confident, not because of just the police, but I feel confident about the community leaders such as Nabil. There are so many other dedicated community leaders that we work with in Manchester. And if there is a big issue like that happen in Manchester, or something happened, I feel we have the lines of communications where we would all be able to get together and come up with a solution. Everything would stay peaceful, and we'd be able to work together to get through any kind of crisis or issue. Race is something people are hesitant to talk about, but it's dialogue that we have to have. We can't just ignore it.
I'm kind of surprised Nabil said it almost doesn't happen.
Well, it's... Let me put it this way. If there are people out there that feel it happens, it's just as bad as if, even though it's not, it's just as bad as it happens. That is our job as the police department to gain trust. We have been able to do that, but we do have a long way to go. The demographics of Manchester are different than, for the most part, all of New Hampshire. When I first became chief, I worked with my command staff to reorganize the department. Our community policing was a part of the patrol division. I wanted to make it its own division because we have, with the demographics in Manchester, we weren't reaching out to underrepresented people. We didn't have any kind of dialogue. There was no communication. So that is what we wanted to do. So with the community policing, its own division, it's run by a captain like all other divisions, and we want the officers to go do constant outreach.
How diverse is the department itself? The staff, the people you see on the street?
Not very diverse. We're working on that. Because I believe it's not a matter of affirmative action. It's a matter of effective policing. The face of your police department, your fire department, your highway department should reflect the face of your city. And it's not a matter of affirmative action. We will never hire somebody that's not qualified. We have high standards. But it's imperative that we do get people, minorities, in more females to work in Manchester. And we are making strides. We are a recruiting officer. He works with an initiative with Southern Hampshire University where we work with minority groups to try to get people interested from the minorities that are interested in becoming police officers. We do a little seminar. Anybody can go to it. We don't just limit it, but we do a seminar explaining to them this is what it takes to be a police officer, the test, what you should stay away from, give them tips, let them ask questions, because a lot of times minorities do not have the contact with police to be able to do that. So we wanted to give them an opportunity. So we are getting more people, minorities and women, applying, and we are hiring some, and we are excited about that. But I want to make it clear that the officers that we do hire, they are very, very qualified, just as qualified as any other officer. This is not about affirmative action. It's about effective policing.
Let's take one more call, or two more calls if we could, Chief Mara. And John's waiting in Manchester. Hi, John. You've been hanging on for a long time. Go ahead. You're on the air with Chief Mara.
Thank you, Laura. It's well worth it. Wanted to let you know that my wife had the good fortune or misfortune of interrupting a burglar at our home in Manchester on July 3rd.
Oh, wow. This year?
Yes, yes. Just it's part of the rash of burglaries the chief has been referring to.
Oh, my goodness.
And so my wife did everything you're supposed to do. She backed away from the woman who mumbled something about being at the wrong address, called the police department. The officers arrived, and the home had been broken into. We went through with them and identified some cash that was missing, as well as my iPad, as well as a checkbook. And the officer in question, I believe his name was Phil Flanagan. You can help me out with that, Chief?
Yes, Officer Flanagan.
Officer Flanagan was great. He spoke with my wife. He got to expand upon the description of the woman that she encountered. And, you know, I'm a former police reporter, and I thought, well, there's so much crime going on that this is probably going to be tucked into a drawer and left to fester. But, in fact, after the holiday weekend, we get a phone call from Detective Jean Roars, who told us that she had an idea who it might be based on her description. My wife was invited to the police department. She had a photo array in front of her, and she picked out the woman she had encountered at her home. And Detective Rose was great throughout the process in keeping us apprised of what was going on. And Thursday of last week, the young woman was arrested. She was arraigned, and she's a repeat offender who will be going back to prison, we assume. My wife is more than happy to testify, but I just wanted to say that the Manchester Police Department did a phenomenal job on this. It's something that easily could have been brushed aside, but because of Officer Flanagan and Detective Roars, that woman has been taken off the street, and it won't bring back our peace of mind, but it certainly makes my wife feel that she was able to do something to help.
Right. She at least got that satisfaction. But boy, I'm sorry to hear that, John. And Chief Mara talked about this earlier, too, you know. Your home maybe no longer feels like your sanctuary. That's tough.
Yeah, and my wife was, you know, seriously questioning her actions. She felt she should have done more and could have done more and was really beating herself up over the weekend. So to have this sense of satisfaction that the thing came full circle is of incredible value to her, you know, in terms of her mindset. So, again, all compliments to the Manchester PD. And I say that as a son of a former Manchester cop and the grandson of a former Manchester cop. So it's in my blood, I suppose, but no way I could have done what these two officers did to help us.
John, thanks a lot for calling in.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Yeah, that rash of burglaries, we started off talking about that, and here we've come full circle, haven't we, Chief Mara?
It certainly. It's something on everybody's minds.
Wow. All right. Thanks, John, for the call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You know, it was interesting, too, to hear from John about the burglary and the arrest made. How, it's funny, how are we to keep track of the rate of solving crime? I mean, you guys, you know, report on it, the people are arrested, maybe they come in. How are we to follow up on this? How hard is it to follow up on your own particular case?
When you, if you're asking me, the stats are kept, there's like a national average of the clearance rate for murder, burglary, robbery. And then we also keep those stats for some of the offenses as well. For instance, robberies, we do better, a lot better than the national average.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that to see how we're doing. We want to be able to assess the methods we're using and compare it to other places to hey, should we be doing something different? You constantly have to assess what you're doing and see if it's working, because you want to move on. With resources, you want to move on to try something new, try something else that will be more effective.
Well, that's actually the last question I wanted to ask you, Chief Mara. Who are your role models in terms of cities or police chiefs who you think have done a stellar job in community policing, in tackling some of these tough issues that we've talked about this hour? Where are some of the role models for you?
I go back to not a particular person. I go back to when I first started on the job, where there were walking routes.
Yeah.
And at the time, your first year, there was this little tradition that you didn't see a car your first year, and you walked on a walking route.
The whole year?
Yeah, for your first year in a job. There was some people didn't, but for the most part, that's what would happen. And I remember being, hey, I want to get in the car. I want to, And then as I, but then as I started, as I progressed, my first couple of years in the job, I wanted to be on a walking route. You got to know the people; they got to know you. You knew what everything that was going on in the neighborhood. If there's somebody that didn't belong, when I say didn't belong, it's not that you, they didn't have a right to be there, but you, people would look out for each other. I wanted to get to back to that. That's what I look back at, where I'd be on my walking route and somebody would come out and say, Officer Marriage, hey, just to let you know, somebody is a suspicious person, or just to let you know, I saw this happen. That's what I wanted to get back to.
And have you done that now as chief with your own officers?
We want to do it with community policing. We're making great strides. We need more police officers, and we need to keep on getting the community involved. Fighting crime is not just police matter. It's what we all have to do together. You heard John, with the help of his wife, we got somebody that committed several burglaries off the street that's already been in prison. That is what we need. We need people to look out for each other. I'm not saying to be a spy for the police. People will say that. That's not what I'm saying. Look out for your neighbor. If you see something suspicious, just take note of it. Maybe you'll find out the next day your neighbor got burglarized and you took down a plate number. That'll stop somebody else from getting victimized. We need to work together. And it's not just about the community. We need to do a better job. The police, Manchester police, we need to do a better job. And that's what we're working to do.
Well, Chief Mara, it's been good to sit down with you for the hour. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's David Mara. Again, he's police chief of Manchester, been on the force for 27 years. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our interns are Faith Mikesell and Tim Camerato. The executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.